Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Poor Richards Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by the Association for Diplomatic Studies and Training, ADST. For more, check out our website at adst.org. ADST, American Diplomacy, warts and all. If you watched the recent Olympic Games, you witnessed historic cooperation between the North and South Korean teams. Just 35 years ago, the last time South Korea hosted the Olympics, North Korea did not participate. This was partially because in 1983, the North Koreans tried to kill the president of South Korea at the time, Chun Doo-hwan, while he was visiting Myanmar. Today on the podcast, we will hear from U.S. diplomat Thomas Dunlap, who served as the political counselor from 1983 to 87 in South Korea.
It was there was always a lot of tension in Korea. Yeah. Chun Doo-hwan was on one of his seldom trips. He didn't travel much outside of Korea, but he took a trip through Southeast Asia and included a stop in Rangoon. Chun was traveling with virtually his entire cabinet, his foreign minister, his defense minister with him. We were never quite sure why. Afterwards, we looked at the list of people who were traveling, why so many of the seniors in his government were there. But he had almost all of his most important ministers with him. And they were scheduled to appear at a ceremony where, I guess, some prayers would be chanted, and you do what you do if you're a Buddhist, and Chun was a Buddhist at a Buddhist shrine. And there were a lot of photographers there, and there were a lot of protocol folks there. And Chun Doo-hwan was a few minutes late. Everybody else had assembled, and we're standing on this platform, and Chun Doo-hwan was about four blocks away in a car making his way toward the pagoda, when two Claymore-type mines were detonated that just swept the whole stage where these people were sitting or standing, killing 11 senior South Koreans, including the foreign minister, who was a great personal friend of mine, Bastard, and a whole handful, double handful of Burmese. I think there were 18 dead, 30 wounded, something like that. Chun, of course, was not among them. The Burmese, within about 24 hours, had run to ground the assassination team and had captured two of its members and killed two of its members. There were four folks. And they were able to get from interrogations, these were badly wounded folks, but they were able to get out of them the details of how they landed. They came off a North Korean freighter, disguised as seamen, carrying their explosives and hand grenades and pistols to defend themselves or to commit suicide, cyanide tablets and so forth. Made their way to the pagoda where they were told to had been trained as the layout of the pagoda, very efficiently put the explosives there. One of them was sitting actually inside the pagoda, out of the range of the explosion, waiting for the time, and he knew the time when the car should arrive. And I think the Burmese chief of protocol came up in a big car, and he thought that was Chun. And so, waited till 3 or 4 minutes and pushed the button. There's no doubt about who initiated this. It was the North Korean intelligence services. The very first thing we did was try and be helpful in this sort of pragmatic sense. We sent two airplanes to Rangoon, one of which had some security officers from our side to help with the investigation, help the Burmese government with the investigation. They arrived on the plane that was to take Chun Doo-hwan back. We also flew a hospital plane there and medevac the defense minister and some others to the hospital at Clark. We later learned that when the plane landed in Seoul about 3 or 4 o'clock on a Monday morning, Chun convened all the remaining members of his cabinet and the deputies who were going to take the places of those who had died out at the airport for an emergency cabinet meeting. And they were all trying to show off to Chun how outraged they were and how macho they were, and they were all giving him ideas about what to do. We could send a bomber strike at Pyongyang and bomb the president's house. We could do this, we could do that, we could do that. And Chun apparently said just about four or five things at that thing. First of all, he said, I'm going to make all these decisions. Nobody should do anything. And in particular, pointing to these guys who had been so outspokenly, so you guys are going to stand down until I tell you what to do, and I'm going to take my time and get some sleep. And I'm going to talk to some folks. Of course, they knew he'd talk to the Americans. Is Washington gets very, very nervous, and people like me start getting phone calls. And Dixie starts getting phone calls. So one of the things you're trying to do is to find out what's going on the Korean side and make sure they're on the reservation, but also sort of calming the nervous Nellies back in Washington that we don't think the world is coming to an end. It was, I suppose it was one of the harder jobs we had after this event to convince them that Chun was as rational and as unbelligerent as he seemed mm-hmm. to be. Because I think, like you just reflected, and like I would have thought mm-hmm. too, it'd be, how can a politician not do something?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't do anything, mm-hmm. actually. Chun was a very reserved and inward man. He never took great many people into his confidence. He wasn't a backslapper. He wasn't a very congenial or convivial mm-hmm. partner. We had a letter from Reagan for him. And we had already, one of the things you asked what I did, I was always the fixer in these kinds of things. I tried to get it, and did, get the news over to the foreign ministry that our ambassador would like to deliver a personal letter of condolences and sympathy and support. And so we had already arranged a meeting for about 2 o'clock that afternoon. Mm-hmm. Dixie went over, as always, alone. Chun Doo-hwan did not want other Americans in his meetings with the American ambassador, particularly other Americans who spoke Korean. Mm-hmm. He came back saying that it was absolutely astounding that Chun was as calm and rational and undistressed. I mean, he was clearly fatigued to an extreme degree and very weary, but Dixie saw no sign of sort of mental stress or anything that would affect his judgment. Mm-hmm. But he made right decisions in some mm-hmm. important times, and this was one of them.
That was Thomas Dunlop recounting his experience when North Korea tried to kill the president of South Korea. Thanks for listening. ADST is an independent nonprofit organization located in Arlington, Virginia. ADST's oral history collection, begun in 1986, contains over 2,500 oral histories, unveiling the horrifying, thought-provoking, and absurd events that have helped shape foreign policy. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, please make a tax-deductible donation to allow ADST to continue its work at www.adst.org.